you deserve more than a lot of doctors I've seen.
Well, I only got a master's degree. I didn't get a doctor. I'm sorry, you were going to ask a question.
Yeah, in your experience, you seem to be have made a stand, you know, in the past for, you know, things that probably brought you some form of persecution.
Well, I do have a file among my research materials, a file of death threats that I keep. The government did at one point take away my passport for 10 years. It was at the time they went after Dr. Du Bois and Paul Robeson and myself, and they did give me a prison sentence for some things that I was publishing, although they couldn't make it stick. I had gotten one of McCarthy's assistants to confess, and when I was about to publish his confession, they tried to put me in jail. That was during the McCarthy period. But I've had my share of it. But and of course, when I was working. When I was much younger, when I was investigating Nazi espionage and so on in America, and writing about that, they had a special group of individuals here who were German agents, Nazi agents, who just specialized in terrorism and sabotage, espionage, and killing. They studied it. They had a school in Berlin where they studied techniques, and I did expose some of them. They were arrested ultimately during the war, and they periodically threatened me and various things of that sort. But as a writer, sometimes in some ways, a writer has some advantages. I have been in situations where I knew the one thing that kept them from doing anything was that it would have made it's bad business sometimes to kill a journalist or a writer, because the press gets so much aroused, you see. Even if they don't agree with you, they think it's a bad thing for writers to get killed. So, sometimes with gangsters and others on a high level that I had gotten to know who were involved. Well, with Henry Ford, Henry Ford was working very closely with mafia individuals, they weren't mafia people actually, but he used the gangsters to carry it to, when the workers were trying to organize the Ford plant, he would have various of the leaders of the trade unions killed, literally assassinated by these professional killers. And I got to know some of them personally. They never threatened me or anything, although they did kill in one case that was certain and in another case that was probable, two individuals who were working with me. In recent years, I didn't think much about it then. I did feel, of course, a terrible responsibility about what happened to those two individuals. It was a matter of carelessness. It wasn't anything that I was responsible for. One who was giving me various materials, a very fine fellow in Detroit, on the Ford situation, just did some very foolish things that I didn't know anything about, very careless things, and they simply eliminated them. But I've been always very conscious of, none of this in connection with myself, but of the way in which individuals who achieve the prominence and have a mass following, like Jim Jones has, the way in which they are potential targets for very ruthless forces, and this is not. I've written about it and worked on the thing for so long, you know, that it's not. It's a matter of that I just come to take for granted. It's part of the ugliness of the world in which we're living. But it's part of reality, and during recent years, of course, we've seen so many instances of it right here now at home, aside from what we know the CIA has been doing throughout the world in eliminating individuals who they thought had leadership. And the Nazis made a very systematic practice of this before the war. They simply tracked down and eliminated as many leaders of anti-fascist movements, for example, as they could. The CIA has done the same thing in the post-war period, like Lumumba and others. So it's something that I've written about and thought about a good deal. You know, when I see a man like that, I think, well, it's just very important that, because very frequently, individuals like Jim Jones are careless of themselves. They think so much about other people, they don't think, as like you say, you speak about the eating, I'm quite sure that it also would pertain probably to a man's health. See the Chavez quite well in recent years. I always noticed he never took care of himself in the way he should have.
We have to constantly remind him to take, you know, things that he needs, and it's just that he doesn't want to take the time, you know, to think about himself is all.
Well, anyway, I mean, you know how valuable he is, so I really don't need to stress that.
Well, I appreciate your saying your own words, though, you know, because we've learned to, you know, we don't show appreciation enough, surely, I'm sure, but
I think you feel it very strongly. Everything I saw indicated to me the expression of the love that people had for him, and everything I heard, I really think you feel it all very deeply. One thing that sometimes happens is that we who believe in the goodness of men and mankind in general sometimes underestimate the evil in other men. Who are willing to go to any end, you know, to maintain their power, and who are so corrupt, if they're willing, as we saw the Nazis were, and as we know the Ku Kluxes and similar elements are in this country, if they're willing to do what the Nazis did, you know, to massacre millions of people, they have no respect for human life, and they're not stupid. That is, the most powerful ones. They are cunning, you know. They have a bestial sort of cunning, we have to be conscious, I feel, all the time of how ruthless they are. That's all, and it is part of our work, part of your work. I'm not speaking out of Jim Jones, but part of your work as an individual and the members of your movement, I feel, you know, to understand how dangerous they are, how ruthless they are, and where he may be careless with himself, to make absolutely sure that this man is properly protected at all times. I, you know, I just felt this very, very strongly after seeing what I saw. I felt that this was something that was very important for everyone who works with him, who has come to understand what he stands for and who follows what he believes. I feel that everyone should be very, very conscious of the need to guard this man.
Uh-huh.
And I knew you wouldn't think that I was presumptuous in expressing this viewpoint.
Oh, certainly not.
Because I'm sure that I mean after all you are thoughtful people and you are aware of what has happened and so you must I know you realize similarly that. That there are people who would consider him to be an enemy, and some of them are people who don't hesitate to use any means.
Well, we've had certain hate mongers in the past try things,
Yeah.
What you're speaking about, you're speaking about something that's even a greater magnitude, more professional. You mean something like that? That would be. You see an element, in other words, that is very capable and ready to do that at any time.
Yeah, and they breed them. You see, they have spread such corruption in the society they have created all sorts of people who are sick and distorted, who are demented, who don't. They don't go around doing. When we moved in here, we live in, as I mentioned, up in the Valley of the Moon. Well, we came up from the East about 18, 19 years ago, and no one knew. People in this country do not read a great deal. In Europe, the Soviet Union, places like that, for example, in the Soviet Union, some of my books are used as textbooks in the schools from one end of the Soviet Union to the other. But in this country, even when I write a bestseller, the number of people who have read it's remarkable how few people read books in America. It's very rare that I meet anyone in Russia or Poland or any of those countries who, and it doesn't matter, it can be a man who's carrying bags into the hotel, or a boy, a young man who's cleaning shoes, or a taxi cab driver, or a woman who cleans the room. Waitress, I very rarely meet anyone there who hasn't read something of mine. Well, when I first came here and settled here, the people in the community heard I was a writer. That didn't mean anything to them. They thought, they didn't know what I'd written exactly, and some of them knew my books had been bestsellers during the anti-fascist period and so on, during the war, and some of them still are. They didn't know what I stood for or what I believed. Then I was called down before I made a number of appearances before the various Senate committees. They've always been trying to get me for one thing or another. And I got called down after I'd been here maybe 6 months or a year. And my boys are very young then. I've got three sons. My wife is not a woman who's frightened. She's gone through too many things, and she's not a woman who gets nervous about anything anyway. But I was in, after I'd gone before this committee, I went to New York to have a discussion about a new book with my publisher. And the news of my appearance before the committee and the accusations, which were lies, that were made against me, had gotten back into the newspapers here. One night, my wife called me up, and it turned out there was a gang here, and they were coming to to rock out the house, they called, and then actually to burn it down. She's not the sort of person who would call me because of nervousness. She was very cool, calm about it, but she said, I think you better cancel your conferences with the publisher and fly home. And I got home in time, to get things under control and to set up in the commute, and it was a very interesting experience in the end. It's ignorant. The people who were doing it, and I got to know and became friends with some of the people who were in that vigilante gang later on. I mean, I go fishing with them. My boys were very little then. They were, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. They couldn't have done anything to protect my wife. A couple of very, very good conservative church-going citizens who had heard this thing was underway had come to the house. One of them was staying here all night to see something that happened that night, a particular night. But when I got back, I just found out that among many of these people, it was a matter of pure ignorance, and I got to know some of them. But I did find out also the ones who had instigated the thing, and they were well-to-do. There were two or three of them, well-to-do former army men who live in the hills here, a big estate, retired, and who maintained contact with the intelligence operations in Washington. One of them had been an advisor to the Secret Service of Chiang Kai-shek, and they had organized. They had, without getting their own, they like to keep their own hands, quote, clean. So they just passed the word down to these people who were ignorant and so on and so forth that I was a dangerous foreign spy or something, some communist agent of the Kremlin or something. And these people, it's like, I don't think actually that it was not really. That they were not an organized hate group, but there were enough of them who was ignorant, who could be mobilized by one guy who was a member of the Butch Society. Well, he's a leader of the Butch Society now. And he was in the National Guard and so on, and he got this group together. In the end, as I say, I managed to squash the thing, but they have plenty of people around who are so uninformed and so ready to hate because sometimes because they themselves are poor and suffering. And
surprising,
they,
isn't it?
You know? They want to blame, they feel they have to blame someone, they don't know who to blame. So it's easy to direct their hatred. You take in the South, where I spend quite a bit of time now, I meet very poor white people who are living as no one should have to live, and who just hate the poor black people in a way that's unbelievable, and they're taught to do this because that keeps them divided. If they ever became united and understood they have the same problem and the same enemy, then they represent a menace. So they're deliberately kept divided, and these hate groups are deliberately cultivated. So these hate groups are something that would be directed against a movement such as yours. But anyway, as I say, the thing is that I felt the value of this man so much that I did want to speak to someone like him. I not only wanted to thank you for your help, but also speak to you about that angle. I had a feeling if I said anything to Jim Jones, he'd probably be just as careless about himself as he ever was before. I will be writing him about a couple of things, because I want to thank him very much for the experience.
That would be very sweet of you. I'm sure that he'd be really glad to hear from
well,
you.
Well, I'll be getting off a letter to him in a day or so.
Well, that'd be so good. I don't know. I think all of us were touched by your humbleness and your depth of feeling that you have. Not alone your knowledge and experience, you know, the things you've been through and feeling for people, and so was our pastor, very, very touched, as you saw, very touched.
Well, you know, it's a mutual, I'm very gratified to hear that. I must say that for me, it's, to have this sort of experience is something that is immensely rewarding, because he spoke about loneliness, and I don't feel lonely in a way, because when I write, I am writing to many people just across the world, so to speak. But on the other hand, a writer's life is lonely. You sit in a room, and when you're working on a book, it's very difficult for me to write, and I may work 2 or 3 years on a book, when I'm going out and getting the material and meeting many people, so on and so forth. I do some, I'm a member of the World Peace Council, so I'm traveling and organizing that way. But when you're actually writing the book, you are alone, and hours and hours and hours, days, and months. The opportunity of coming in contact with people like yourself is tremendously helpful and inspiring to me. It's a source of sustenance, food. When I go into the when I go down south and meet a man such as the one I spoke about in that prison, and I meet many like that who are such noble, wonderful folks, to know about them and to be with them, you see, is without that contact, my work would be impossible for me to write, because they give me whatever strength I have comes from them, and I learned a great deal from being with your people, I'm very sorry my sons were not there. I'm going to arrange for them to come to some of your other meetings.
Oh, that's kind of you.
I have two of them in the, it would be very, very good for them. I'm thinking of their welfare. There are two of them who live in the West here. They're in their late 20s, early 30s now.
I think we'd be pleased to meet them.
Fine guy. And one of them, by the way, has been in prison a number of times. He was, but all of his sentences were for participating in demonstrations against discrimination. They were all during the period when he was trying to get equal employment for blacks and other minority groups. And he was in peace demonstrations and so on. And he was, a number of times put in jail for this sort of thing. He's a fine fellow. But they would be very, very good for them to see your people, to be among them. So I've already told them about what a wonderful experience. Ria, my wife, has too. But I've taken up about half of your morning now, so.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you, Mr. Kahn.
I really want to thank you again for your thoughtfulness.
Well, again, I must say that it was my pastor, it was Jim Jones, that thought and asked me to get on quickly to see that you had pearls to rest on, to be comfortable, and is there anything that you needed, he said, be sure that it's taken care of immediately.
Well, it is extraordinary, man. Wonderfully, wonderfully thoughtful.
Yeah.
I mean, you're very fortunate to be involved in such work. And,
yes.
And I feel from our brief acquaintanceship, he's fortunate to have you with him.
Well, I don't know. I know that it would be a very, very dismal life without him.
You see, you find what has happened really is, sum it up. And what I was talking to some students here from the States a month ago. And what I said was, a man has to find a purpose in his life. And you found it. And if you don't find a purpose in your life, then it's gone. And life is a very, very precious thing. What you have is the richest possession that anyone could have. And that's the purpose that you have.
Yes.
And as you say, he's the one who has helped you find it.
Yes, that's true. And so many others,
Right.
And it seems like he never runs out of time to talk with people. You know, he never turns anyone away. And he's never too busy to meet a human need, how very minute it might seem. He's very much interested in feeling. Has a depth of feeling for people, and their feelings.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, he is really most unique. Anyway, it was good to hear your voice again, and we'll be in touch, because having now found your movement and what it is, I shall not want to lose contact with it.
Well, I can't say how much I appreciate you calling, and your concern for our pastor's welfare was very well received. I'll pass it on, and
very
I appreciate
good. Very good.
Appreciate you calling.
Right.
Do keep in touch.
Take care of yourself, too.
I will, sir.
Okay.
You do the same,
right.
Will you?
You bet.
Thank
bye-bye.
You so much.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.